Hello, you're listening to a spoiler-filled film conversation. Hooray!
Moon. Bang, zoom, straight to the moon. Toot, to the moon. To the moon. Oh dear. Hello. Welcome to Spoilerville Film Conversation. Hooray. I am Richard. With me to talk about the moon. Oh no, sorry. Moon. Is Abby
Hello.
and Jamie.
Hello.
Yeah, so this week, Abby picked the film. She selected 2009's Moon and is now going to tell you who made it and who's in it, and then we can start the podcast proper after that.
It was written by Nathan Parker and Duncan Jones, who also directed, and stars Sam Rockwell and Kevin Spacey. And it's about astronaut Sam Bell, who... What? Sorry. This blurb on IMDb. My
Just make
gosh.
up your own. Man is on moon, that's it. Done.
Astronaut Sam Bell has a quintessentially personal computer toward the end of his 3-year stint on the moon, where he, working alongside his computer, Gertie, sends back to Earth parcels of resource that has helped diminish our
Don't
planet's
read
power
it if it does
problems.
if it doesn't make sense.
What?
Just fucking make up your own. It's not hard, is it? Like Sam Rockwell is on the moon doing some mining, and then he finds himself there. What?
What a... That is... I'm looking at it now.
It's...
What a fucking summary. I mean, those things are true about the film.
Parcels of resource, is that what it says?
Yes.
Parcels of a resource that has helped diminish the planet's power problems.
It's just, it's fucking, he's on a moon mine.
It's also, it's helium 3.
The best helium of the franchise. Sam Rockwell's on the moon with himself and a computer voiced by a naughty man who done that groping that we all found out
Hey,
about.
now, allegedly.
Cocks were fondled, people were blamed.
Jesus Christ.
Weird
Yeah,
Christmas, weird Christmas videos were put out to try and move on. Yeah, we're not here to talk
I do
about.
stand no, I do stand by what I said before we did this, though, that they should go back and just have Christopher Plummer dub the Gertie lines.
Yeah, it would be. I mean, I'm not. You know, I mean, you set a precedent then, and let's go back and redub everyone who does a wrong. If you get Me Too'd, that's it. You get deleted out of the film, and they
It
fucking
plummeted.
yeah. They animate like a naughty dog in your place or something. Anyway, yeah, Abby, you picked Moon, the directing debut of that chap who came out of the cock of David Bowie. Well, 50% of his DNA.
My gosh, you're vulgar. I'd forgotten.
It's the fun trivia that Duncan Jones came out of David Bowie's R.I.P. penis and balls.
R.A. penis.
R.I. penis. Oh, this is an offensively way awful. He's a person, and it's a boring bit of trivia because he's a man
Everyone
unto
knows
himself.
two things about Duncan Jones is that one, he's David Bowie's son, and two, he made two good films and then his career fell off a cliff somehow.
What would you say the second one is? Because I think Source Code is pretty good, but that's not what you're referring to, is it?
I haven't seen Source Code, but people have told me it's good, and also this is good, and then he did World of Warcraft.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You
So
know.
Source Code was essentially like Groundhog Day train.
Yeah.
So.
And he also did a really weird one called Mute, which is just a less good Blade Runner 2049 by all accounts, so.
Yeah, I don't know,
But maybe he'll get back on track.
well, I certainly would be happy for him to keep making stuff, but I'm not a producer, so sorry, Duncan, and sorry about your dead dad's cock talk so early. He's obviously listening. We asked him. We sent him a tweet saying, "Please listen to some random people from Wales just talk shit." like about your film, and then talk mainly about your dad's ball bag. It's so awful. Anyway, but Abby,
wait. I just want him to know that the favorite my favorite album of his dad's is Low.
I'm sure he gives a big shit.
I'm just trying to rebalance the scales after you went on a dick tangent. Two minutes into.
Back on track. You know, Abby, you picked Moon. Do you want to fill us in on why and then kind of just, you know, a bit of context, I guess.
I just felt like a bit of Sam Rockwell.
So you got double the helping, even triple the helping. What is it about Sam Rockwell that you're so fussed on?
He's, how can I put this without sounding bitter?
Oh?
No, it's just, you know how you just like an actor who is both skilled but not too attractive. It makes you feel better.
Harsh. I mean,
that's how I describe myself, to be honest.
Well, steady on. I mean, I think we're slagging Sam Rockwell. In this, he does have cause to look a bit trampy, but for the most part, I definitely put him in the category of attractive blokes.
He's one of those celebrities who's attractive but slightly funny looking, like attractive in an unusual way, as opposed to like I don't know, who's a generically handsome person.
Let's not start judging people on their looks. How about that?
No, let's rank them.
This week on the podcast, we're abandoning the Moon chat just to rank every actor from most attractive to least.
You know what I mean, though? Sometimes you just look at someone and it's like... Actually, I didn't have it per se, but Brad Pitt had it for a long time, where everyone was like, oh, fuck you, Brad Pitt, and you're acting and you're looking like that.
Yes. You're too attractive and too talented. Fuck off. Like, but like,
this is a very backhanded compliment you're playing to Sam. I like him because he's not smugly attractive. He plays a lot. He plays a lot of simpletons, I think, or like kind of comedy idiots a lot.
He's very. He has a very strong oddball charisma that carries through, but he can also pull off just like straight. Man, like the other version of himself in this, the one that emerges after the first one starts getting sick, who's very, but he's also like, yes, I'm an all-American astronaut. Like he comes across like that, and it's a really good example of what you're talking about. He's able to kind of do both ends of that spectrum very well.
Mm. And whenever he's on a chat show, he's always willing to get up and dance and show off his fancy suits.
Does that in this too?
He loves a dance. He's like a he's like a Christopher Walken who likes to sneak in a bit of dancing whenever he can. So this is a nice film with Sam Rockwell in. I felt like it. That's as simple as we're going.
Well, I rarely get the opportunity with one of the people I feel like to have a film where they are actually in it a lot. It's like, oh, I feel like watching something with Billy Zane in. That's a shame.
you have a proclivity for actors who are underdogs or just bit parts. You know, they're not really in the film.
I think it's one of the defining things of this podcast is that we all have a favorite. Like, oh, it's that guy actor, because I did the same thing with Lucky with Harry Dean Stanton.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, Sam Rockwell, he gets work, though, so I don't know if he's one of those Bruce McGill types where you go, is he in it? Oh, yeah.
He kind of is, because just looking through his IMDb, he's often, like, he's not a leading man in a lot of things. And when he is, it's always something, like, strange. And this is much more of a sort of one-man show. He's also head thug in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, yeah. We mentioned him, didn't we, at the time? Yeah. Yeah, we got a podcast of that, too. Okay, Abby, that's fine. You're allowed to pick it for whatever reason you want. But it's because you saw it back in probably about 2009, at least, right?
I'm trying to remember if I saw it in the cinema. Maybe not.
Hard to say. Been a while. It was one of those, like... When it came out, it got a little bit of buzz and hype, and you're like, there's this cool film, yada yada, and then you check it out, and you know, get into it.
It was also everyone saying, you know, oh, David Bowie's son has made a movie, and it's good. So there was a lot of that going on.
Yeah. I remember reading an article about it in the physical movie magazine that we used to get. I can't remember if it was this would have been Empire or Hot Dog in 2009.
No Total Film fans in here?
I am, but Abby didn't subscribe.
I subscribed to Total Film back in the day.
It's all about Hot Dog, Jamie. Come on now. There wasn't even that many issues.
It's too pretentious for me.
Pretentious?
I don't know.
Anyway, Jesus Christ, just discussing dead mediums of dead franchises of things that... I mean, does anyone actually read articles? I mean, everything's just clickbaity YouTube shit about films now. That's how you hear about everything. Someone's doing a top 10 reasons I can't wait to see the new Fast and the Furious.
Everything wrong with...
yeah, preemptive criticism.
All the plot holes in... Simple. Sonic the Hedgehog.
One, he's a talking fucking hedgehog. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, but you've known about it for a while. We have it on DVD. We like this film. That gives you a sense of what we might think of it overall. But, Jamie, had you watched Moon before?
Yeah. I watched it. I don't know how long ago it was. It was long enough after it had come out that it had been, like, it was on DVD. Maybe I streamed it. Anyway, it was in, like, oh, fuck, I don't know. It was
sometime.
A couple of years after it came
out.
No, I started the sentence confident that I knew when I watched it. And then the more words came out, the more I realized I don't actually remember. No, it was a couple of years after it came out, but it was a while ago from now. I also forgot how fucking long ago it was.
Yeah, 2009, man.
This film is 11 years old.
Yeah. It's also it's set in about 15 years from now, as of 2020 as we record this now. So it's going to happen, guys. We're going to mine the moon.
Just like all the events of Blade Runner happened last year.
Yes, exactly. And Back to the Future. Oh, God, we've passed so many seminal sci-fi dates now. It's not that many
Lisa's
left.
Lisa's wedding.
Whose wedding?
Lisa Simpson. That was actually 10 fucking years ago.
Well, yeah, it is weird. Well, that whole non-aging thing of cartoons is a different kettle of fish. One thing that kind of freaks me out, obviously since Neil Armstrong and the boys popped up to the moon for the first time and landed on it like a bunch of bosses... Old, was his name Michael Collins? Was he the third one? And Buzz Lightyear?
Michael Collins was the one who didn't actually get
just sat in the pod like a cunt.
Yeah. While they fucked off and gallivanted around on the surface.
Old boring old Armstrong and his, kind of powdery dust. Ah! The first words on the moon. None of this fucking... It's big old step for man bullshit. I can't even remember one of the most famous quotes ever. That he got wrong. I mean, it's... Anyway. But he was just banging on it. He'd landed on the moon, stepped on it, and it was like, right, oh, the dust's all powder. I mean, why am I having a go at one of the most important parts of history? Neil Armstrong, obviously when he stepped on the moon, he said, one giant leap, etc. But before that, he was already on the moon talking about... The surface of the moon. I don't know. Like
you having a stroke?
Didn't he deck someone fairly recently?
No, that was Buzz Lightyear did that.
Okay.
Oh, Woody was like, "You've never been. You can't fly."
Some fucking nerd confronted it. It was actually, this was a while ago now too, but some fucking nerd was like, it's all fake, it's a hoax, you never landed on the moon. Buzz Aldrin just punched him in the face, which is just fucking fantastic.
I love it.
Yeah.
Fair play, like. I don't mean to sound disrespectful. I love the fact that we fucking popped our asses to the moon. I'm super proud of all of NASA and all the people who did it. And it freaks me out that we haven't been back to the moon. Humans haven't been back on the moon since the 70s. Like a few missions from 1969 onward, and then let's just float about in space. Let's not actually land on the moon, because we've been there now, There's nothing else there. It's just dust and rocks. Fuck it. Apparently, though, there's HC3. So, is that what it's called? You can mine the shit out of it.
Oh, did you just bring it back around to the film?
I don't know.
I did.
Oh, lovely.
Surprised.
You just
surprised.
Orbited all the way around the moon to come back to the...
I'm the Andrew Collins of the podcast. Andrew Collins? Wrong person.
Michael Collins.
Michael Collins. I don't want to be the Andrew Collins. He's a radio presenter. Even more underwhelming than Michael. Anyway, Abby.
Yes.
They land in 15 years' time, 2035, there's going to be Sam Rockwell in a little moon base looking after all the big old machinery that's going to be digging up a load of shit to send back to Earth so that we can have, you know, something better than solar power or wind power or burning dinosaurs or whatever. Isn't it? That's the idea.
He's one man up on the moon by himself. He thinks for 3 years. But... ooh. He crashes when he goes out to maintain one of the machines, and then we think he gets revived back in...
this is far too big a quicker pace here. This is the whole, like, the spoiling the whole thing. We haven't talked about the scenario, and you're instantly like, he thinks it's going to be 3 years, but he crashes, but there's a computer.
Exactly doing the scenario.
Yes, I know, it's also going too quickly, if anything.
We're not here to do a minute-by-minute description of what actually happens in the film.
Yeah, Rich, if you do a fucking blow-by-blow in this film, I'm going to come downstairs and punch you in the face.
Well, this got unnecessarily aggressive. You were saying...
I'm doing the scenario. The scenario is, a guy thinks he's only going to be on the moon for 3 years. He has an accident. We think he's been revived, but it turns out he's a clone. And then that clone finds the first guy, and they realise things are not as they seem.
Because they're both clones.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's all very... it's quite convenient that in showing us the story of Sam Bell, who is played by Sam Rockwell, who is... he's kind of an average Joe kind of astronaut, I guess. I mean, he's not exactly doing anything that important other than maintaining a base, is he?
I think he has the same job as Lister and Red Dwarf, more or less.
Yeah. He's just sorting out the food maintenance machine for the rest of the crew. No, he's very much a sort of maintenance guy, though, isn't he? There's not, like, it's automated... and there's not much to do, but apparently need one guy just to sort of make sure, just to dust and, you know, move things about a little bit. Computers and robots can't be doing anything too sophisticated, like reaching round the back of something to get a screw that's fallen out. Anyway, it's rather convenient that we get this crash. You do need to go a little bit. You can't just delve into it all and start talking about it, because it's got that thing of showing you something and then revealing without... like, it's got that misleading reveal, isn't it? So it's convenient that the character we're following has a crash, because the protocol for setting up a second clone to cover the next few years on the base is pretending there's a crash. But that's just waking them up. So it's, you know, a bit contrived. But we haven't even talked about it properly, so it's...
Have you seen films before, Rich?
I was going to say, that's not contrived, that's just the plot.
It's just very convenient, is all.
It's so convenient that Bruce Wayne's parents just happen to be shot in front of him. In order for him to become Batman.
Alright.
How else are they supposed to convenient?
What I mean is, obviously, the story... We're going to spoil it, because, you know, that's the point of us chatting about it, is to have a good chat. Yeah, but, like, in terms of when you're watching the film the first time, you're not sure what's... It's playing it as if the crash is being followed up, but you're actually... Like, it doesn't show you that you're not following the same Sam Rockwell character, isn't it? Like, no. Sam Bell, we think we're watching the same Sam Bell be woken up after an accident, but it's the second one that's been awoken to, you know, deal with shit.
So yeah, I'm just... it's a really good sleight of hand in that way.
Yeah, it's... I was going to say, the first time I watched it, there were a few times where... And I'm not someone generally who gives a shit about spoilers. I usually look them up before I go and see a film because fuck it. Like, I don't care. But this one I went into only knowing that it was, like, people were saying it was very good and he's very good in it. And it was directed by David Bowie's son. That was about it. So there were a few times as things are revealed where I was going, fucking what? What? Especially that first reveal that the one that wakes up isn't the one that crashed. And then it all sort of starts... the small-scale escalation it does is really good.
Mm.
I think the trailer, if you saw it at the time, it does give away that Sam Rockwell is in it more than once. But it suggests heavily that it's possibly some kind of space madness. That is he seeing... It doesn't give away that there's clones. It says, like, he... is either seeing past versions of himself, or it just says, oh, like, Sam Rockwell's in it more than once, but there's a weird mystery and possibly there's a computer convincing him he's mad or he is mad, or, you know, you don't know why it's happening.
Well, the first clone was hallucinating, and that's what caused him to crash the rover in the first place.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
That is something that I didn't... Either I read it or just didn't understand what was happening. Like, is that just a symptom of the clone reaching the end of its...
Yeah, because it's common in the elderly before they die. They start hallucinating and...
Yeah, changes. Is that what that... Like, is it just a symptom of his sort of sickness and his beginning to break down?
Or it could be the fact that the concept of this... I mean, taking away the framework of the narrative... In this reality, there's a slightly dubious corporation back on Earth that have set up a business mining on the moon. There's nothing else colonized. Like, the moon is colonized in as much as we've set up a sort of a base, and there's big, those kind of triple, what's the number? Six-wheeled big mining trucks drive around, and they dig up stuff from the dark side of the moon.
Yeah, it's less colonized, it's more, like, industrialized, like...
Yeah, and so, it put me in mind of, I atmospherically as well, this film is a lot like a comic book I really like, or a graphic novel called Moon Cop, that's by Tom Gold. He's a really great illustrator, and he just has a nice little funny story about, like, a bloke policing the moon, and he slowly realizing there's no one else on the moon with him, and that the last person is going to leave, and he's just like the remainder person just on his own on the moon. But it's got that weird, so we obviously people don't live on the moon, but we need a human there to sort of do what the computers and machines can't do, which is,
yeah,
you know, just I guess when you've got, like, so the main computer is a computer called Gertie, right? And that's a big monitor that follows, goes around the ship. It's on, like, what would you call it, like a tram line thing in the ship?
Yeah.
It's like a movable monitor computer that is in control of the base, and it's also got a separate arm that's a bit like, just like a claw hand that can do stuff. But it's mainly a butler for, like, Sam Bell, the guy, the maintenance guy. But, like, it is pretty much doing everything. It's in charge of everything.
Yeah.
But, I mean, what do you need a human for? Like, literally just repairs that the arm can't do. It's, like...
Yeah, it's doing...
Fiddly monkey shit.
Basically. And that's why, like, it's part of the whole corporate setup of it is the idea that, well... If we send people up there, that's really expensive and we have to fucking take care of them. But if we just clone this one guy over and over again, like, he's just another tool. Yeah, it's not, and he's a clone. Who gives a shit? We don't have to care about him. Like,
yeah.
Which is, it's one of those things that's surprisingly, like, as the film goes on, and they, like, the two clones develop a relationship, but also a realization of that's what they are.
Mm.
It gets dark very quickly towards the end.
Yeah. It's good because, it creates a lot of interesting moral quandaries with what would be acceptable and what would be done if we had the technology to do stuff like this.
The thing that I like, or one of the things that I like the most about it, is the fact that these two clones that are artificially implanted with the memories of the same person still develop their own independent personalities once they're, like, confronted with each other.
It's that thing of if you birth a clone, it then becomes unique, isn't it? Where you've got your own identity now, even if you're exactly the same as someone. And whatever happens to you makes you individual then, doesn't it?
It's an interesting, like, one of the aspects of the film that's most interesting is how many different influences it takes from different sci-fi films, but still puts it in it. Like, it doesn't just feel like a mashup of...
like Space Odyssey or...
Yeah, it has a lot of those elements to it. Like, the set design is very 70s. It reminded me of Alien and stuff like Silent Running.
Definitely.
And then you've got Gertie, who's very much an updated Hal.
Yeah.
But also a non-sinister Hal. Well, I guess voiced by Kevin Spacey kind of retroactively makes Gertie kind of sinister now.
I think in the film, even without... There is, because the approach they take, Gertie's an interesting character because it's the non-human company that Sam has. And so it's interesting because you're kind of trying to make up your mind whether you find Gertie unsettling or not, because he's so calm. He's a calm voice that just chats with Sam. He's basically butlering him or nannying this maintenance guy, and he's calm, and he has these, like, there's the little screen with emojis on to sort of give, I guess, the illusion that it's thinking sad or happy things, even though it's a computer.
Yeah, it's a way to keep the human element, like, to, I guess, keep the clones, you know, kind of calm or have something to relate to. But
it's so funny, though, isn't it? Like, just sad face or worried face.
I almost wish that you could update the film and CG in some more modern emojis. So you've got
eggplant emoji
in there. Yeah. Eggplant, the weird fucking water drops that people use for something that isn't water drops.
Oh, do it would be great. Is like, hey, Gertie's there? Who's that guy standing there? It's just shit emoji. embarrassed face.
I would say the emojis do make me think there's some similarity here between this and then 10 years later, the game Death Stranding, which I mentioned before we started, but, like, there's a lot of similarities in the sense of isolation, the design of a lot of the vehicles and the feel of, like, the world, and also the use of emojis, because in that game, people communicate with you via email, and those emails are filled with emojis.
I think, you know, in the OEs, it was like, okay, yeah, it was. You were trying to predict the future, and you go, let's work in this idea that we all send them to each other anyway as a shorthand for communicating.
Yeah.
So having a computer programmed to use them as a kind of... there's no point. We're not animating a face like it's the fucking 80s and we think computers are going to be 3D rendering. Let's just have something to convey... make the programming slightly humanized so it's less like a machine.
But I think that initial feeling of you don't know whether Gertie is... Like, I think it's playing on your expectations of the genre. It's assuming you're already familiar with things like 2001.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, actually, is you, because it's such a calm, placid voice that Kevin Spacey's you're instantly like, hang on, you're starting to think a little bit like, oh, there's something sinister here. It's a bit like another game it put me in mind of was like Portal, where there's the calm sounding robots that are kind of fucking with you, but GLaDOS is trying to come across as acceptable and nice and pleasant, but it's tricking you. So I think you're listening to Kevin Smith try and reassure Sam.
Smith.
Oh, god damn it. You're listening to Gertie talk and you're thinking, oh, this robot's... Like, whenever a smiley face comes up, you go, what's it really thinking?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and I think that's very deliberate.
Yeah.
Like, the film does a lot of... you know, and it the reason I mentioned earlier that I don't care about spoilers is it's almost a reaction to how many films after The Sixth Sense were like, well, you have to have a twist. You have to have a big twist that makes people go, oh, no way. And it's like, fuck off. If your film relies on that, it's shit. But this film, it doesn't rely on that stuff because it's still good even when you go in. But a lot of that stuff is done so well in this that it genuinely works without taking away from other things. Like, none of the twists retroactively make everything else not make sense or require a explanation of how, you know, so some fucking shit on the internet doesn't go, plot hole. Like,
It's a satisfying seeing the pieces come together and you get the fuller picture. It isn't like, oh my god, I can't believe it, he's a clone or whatever. It's more...
I also think with all the different, very deliberate references or, I guess, homages to previous sci-fi films and genre stuff, it has those in there. But they are used to build the world around the three main characters. They are still the centerpiece. Because mm-hmm. A lot of the issues with a lot of films that do, you know, reference back to old movies or deliberately reference their influences is that that can take over the film. Whereas this just has it all in the background because the real focus is Sam's and Gertie.
Yeah, it's it doesn't get overwhelmed by it. It's going, look, you can see the influences, but I want to tell this story, which is a story of a man coming to terms with the fact that he's a clone and that he's been duped and that he is also with himself. Like, he's not only coming in into, like, he's not like not just one person accepting they're a clone. It's one person with a clone having to, like, put up
so
with
you
a younger
are as well.
Yeah, it's like you're like a younger version of me. That, you know, the good thing in this is there's a sense of a self. There's like a sell-by date on the clones. So we got one clone that's kind of getting old and ready to be finished with. So it's a bit worn out and a bit, you know, it's just rotting away essentially.
Oh, fucking incinerated! That's one of my favorite scenes of the film. Is where the old dying Sam discovers how they're, you know, in quotation marks, sent home.
Yeah, just pop yourself into the special pod that sends you back home, and that's your instant funeral. Thanks for doing your job.
Well, talking of him being very ill, I had norovirus when I watched this for the
show. Not ideal.
No. So when he was throwing up and it was like teeth, I was like, that's me in an hour. I don't know.
Abby, do you find you had particularly high empathy for older, rotten Sam?
Yes, I did. I felt so sorry for him.
Yeah.
There's something very specific about whenever an actor has to play someone who is very, very sick. Certain actors just do it really, really well, and fuck, Sam Rockwell, like, you can feel it. Watching him in, like, the later stages of the film as the first clone, or not the first of these two clones, like, you feel like you're contracting the flu from the film.
Well, Abby definitely did, because she had contracted norovirus.
You can feel, like, it's the way he moves. When, you know when you get really ill and your skin hurts?
Yeah. Well, I think
your clothes touching it.
Like, the key to showing it on screen is you got to have the sweats, the little bit of, like, eye baggage, and then anyone coughing and spitting up blood and teeth is going to be like, oh,
well,
God.
Also, it's that thing where you shrink. Like, you
become,
pull,
like a
all
damp
of your
rag.
Limbs. Yeah, everything pulls in because you're like, oh, the air hurts me.
So yeah, like, it does a good job, doesn't it?
Yeah, and he just, it's fucking gross at times, even though he's not doing anything. He looks like he's very close to shitting himself.
Sometimes he's just standing there and you're like, oh, don't.
Oh, God. And his hand's shaking and like, oh, God. But then what works really well is having that contrasted against the other one, which is the, you know, fit, stand-up, short hair, clean-shaven astronaut Sam. And it's fantastic the way Sam Rockwell just embodies those two completely opposite ends of the spectrum of the same character.
Yeah, because it's only, like, one of them has a 3-year living on the moon bit of experience. They've been fed loads of videos of correspondence with their assumed wife and kid and stuff. Yeah. And they've been fed the plan and the you're going to go home. They're being given something to keep them going so they do their job. Mm. And so he's more invested than the fresh new one who's like, because one clone is trying to accept that he's a clone after 3 years of being brainwashed, and the other one has woken up, not doesn't know what's happened, and then has gone, shit, I'm a clone. So he's had, like, we got one, the younger one is a little quicker to accept it, and it hasn't had that 3 years of, like, being manipulated so much. So
yeah.
And then the two of them playing off each other is, like, a really fun, interesting thing to do, just because it's, like, how would, you trying to, when you're watching it, you end up going, yeah, what would I, like, be like with myself? I mean, I'd be so irritating.
I cannot think of anything worse than being just stuck with just me.
I'm glad you said you, because if you would have said me, a clone of me, I'd be really annoyed.
Yeah, but also that. But like the idea of being stuck somewhere that you can't leave with a physical manifestation of yourself who is essentially the same as you. Yeah. Just, I already don't know how other people do it who live with me. So the idea of, like, me living with me, fuck it. Oh.
But, like, do you know that those times where other people fall out with you, you go, well, I know I'm right. When it's you, you're like, well, I am me, so we should agree about this.
I'm right. No, I'm right. Me. I'm right. Not you, me.
We are not right. I am the more right of us.
It's also just, like, you know when you're like on your own in the house for a few hours and I start talking to myself and then after a while I'm like, oh, shut the fuck up. I know. I just
if there's two of you, there'd be four people having a conversation.
But like, and he does a really good job of, and again, he's not like physically there with himself, which makes it even more like interesting, like as an actor. Yeah. He's not there, you know, he's not in the room with himself, so he's having to kind of also make up what he's doing, what he thinks the other him is doing. So all the tension that feels very, very real.
Well, they physically fight at one point, so...
Yeah. Also, probably my favourite example of that petty bickering between them is the older, sicker Sam dancing to... is it Walking on Sunshine?
Yeah.
And repeatedly turning it on and dancing when the other Sam is trying to have a serious conversation with him.
And that again, was a reprise as well, because earlier on, when he tried to have a conversation, young Sam would not stop hitting the boxing bag.
Yeah.
So he's been a dick to himself both ways in such a petty fashion.
It's such a weird psyche thing, isn't it? Because really, it's you, isn't it? So... You should get on, surely.
You know yourself well enough to get on your own nerves like nobody fucking else.
If you disagree with yourself, you know that they are currently not accepting it. I'm right. Well, he's not accepting it because he knows he's me, so I wouldn't have accepted it. So he isn't accepting. So I am. You can never. It's like an impossible paradox. Yeah.
But it's also that thing of like a self-awareness where. You can only be self-aware up to a certain point. It is only when you're outside of yourself that you realise, oh, fuck.
But yeah. there are
God, I'm insufferable.
There are some examples of he gets himself. So, like, he the older one gives the gift of, like, do you know when the, like, that sleeping bag with the separate legs where you could, like, they were really popular at the time. They were like, oh, look at this sci-fi shit. I'm in a sleeping bag, but I have arms and legs or whatever in the sleeping bag. And he's really pleased with it. It's like, oh, it's really comfy. And it's like, yeah, I liked it. So you, like, you're the easiest person to get gifts for because you've just experienced it all. And you're like, I know what I'd want now. I just kind of wonder how long you're like, wait, should I blow myself? Yes, I should. If I had been Duncan Jones, my script would have got very sexy and dark very quickly.
A fascinating potential porn parody in this film.
It only takes one of you to consent before both of you have. And we're not talking about Kevin Spacey there. It's literally...
Oh, God.
This is one query I had before we... carry on with this line. Well, not well. Before we carry on.
Let's not carry on with that line.
No. I just wanted to say, like, so, back to the concept here. The idea is, they've got a company has gone, let's be evil corporate dickheads, like all corporations usually are. Amazon essentially have gone, right, we're in charge of the moon mining. What's the most unethical, cheap thing we can do? And they've discovered that they have secret clone technology, or possibly, yeah, I think it's secret because the people of Earth, there's an implication that it breaks as news at the end. But, like, so they got cloning technology. It's cheaper to, like, blister pack a bunch of clones, send them all up in one trip to the moon, plonk them there, than it is to send up a new maintenance man every 3 years. Like,
wait.
Yeah.
It's obviously very economical cloning technology then.
Well, you don't know, well, like, there may be an element of production up there.
What, like, it's just, they make it seem like it's just like in primary school where you grow sunflower seeds in a little pot. They just grow. They're just in under the base, there's a bunch of them that just are in pods that you crack out every 3 years when the old one has run its course. Like, they have a sell-by date and or whatever, use-by date. And that's, like, but they're already sending, like, a module with all the fuel down to Earth. So is it that big a deal to send someone every 3 years that we have to be super unethical about it?
But they have to train them. They have to pay them.
It's just easier to trick an idiot clone than it is.
They also would have to, like, take care of them should anything happen or provide, like, retirement, healthcare.
Oh, my,
like,
God, yeah, that's a good point. Now we're talking, like, corporate bastards. Yeah, you don't have to... There's no ethics for someone who's dead and crumpled up like a bit of old,
like,
paper.
The idea, I think, is it's very much, again, another nod to an influence. Like, it's how in Blade Runner the replicants aren't considered people, and it's like the point of that film is the struggle with what it is that makes someone a sentient being that's you know, allowed freedom and the ability like that acknowledgement that they're a separate sentient thing. And that reminds me as well, that's another aspect of the film that I like, in that it relates back to the idea in Blade Runner that, you know, that film approaches it deals with it in a different way, but it has that idea of a clone, essentially, or a replicant, I guess, that has someone else's memories, and in order for them to not realize what they are. And this film takes that further in focusing specifically on what that would mean for that clone to discover that, with the whole thing of him, yeah, like, digging into the messages from his wife and then eventually calling his own home and, like, hearing his own voice because the real Sam is there, and finding out that what he thought was his wife had died years ago and his daughter was grown up.
This leads into another question I had about this aspect of it, actually. So we got these grow your own clones who are being duped into thinking, like, because they're grow your own slaves, really. They're just, it's like we create organic copies of a human. We don't consider them human. They think they're human. We go, yeah, it doesn't matter. Just trick them so they do work for free, and we just feed them beans and shit. And just have a stupid computer tell him, it's okay, buddy, just keep doing your job. And so we've put this in place, and we find out in the film that there was a version one of Sam. So Sam Rockwell playing Sam Bell. Ugh. Sam Bell was a human, is a human on Earth. Did he, like, it's implied that he just has a wife and a kid and that they use his memories to go in. They're clones of him and his memories are in them. But did he, like, agree to this? Is he, like, a massive prick? Like, you're a clone of a guy who agreed to be cloned and trick all of his clones.
Yeah, I mean, he'd have to.
I think he'd have to be complicit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or at least he had to agree to... He might have agreed to being tested on and all this kind of thing so they could harness all of his material.
The idea is that he is complicit and that it's not seen as a cruel or bad thing because they are just clones.
Because he thinks they're not him. Like, he's like, well, yeah. they think they're me, but they're just stupid copies.
But it also, it's interesting as well because it does like a both sides of the coin thing, because while they do justify it, presumably to themselves, by saying, well, they're just clones, it is also something they have apparently kept from the public.
Yeah, because it is...
That's the end of the film.
You can't start growing your own slaves and psychologically tricking them.
Yeah. Which also, that's another part of the film that I was interesting, is because they do this whole setup where they are trying to escape and get back to Earth. The older clone obviously realizes that the wife is dead, there's nothing, like, what's
he's
the point?
Dying as well. He realizes that he's got, like, 3 years and he's at the end of it.
And they're sending a team to essentially try and clean up what's happened and get things
back on track. That's another one. Look, they can afford to, like, if a big disaster, like a big crash happens, they have to send a maintenance team to, like, prop up the dummies again. And idiot, you keep going to work in the hamster wheel. We'll fix the things we have to. But isn't that, you may as well send the maintenance guys every 3 years then.
That would be a one-time thing, though, presumably.
Well, how many times?
I don't know. It's the hubris of the corporation as well.
Yeah, we're not saying that they've had, like, the best idea ever, Rich. They had an evil corporate idea, and they're trying to make it work.
Well, that's isn't it? Like, I mean, the bottom line for all corporations is make money. It's not we have to be evil to make money. You know? Like, they could be cheap and make money. It doesn't have to be this elaborate necessarily. That's the only argument I'm making. I love the film. It's great. I just was trying to question whether this is the most logical way to mine on the moon.
It's not logical, but it's cheaper to just have clones doing it. But it's cheaper if nothing goes wrong.
Which, of course,
in this film, it goes wrong. But whenever they're sending the cleanup team, I assumed... And again, I think I'd forgotten how it ended, because it was so long ago that I saw it, and it surprised me the first time too. But if this was something that I had made, I would have ended it in the cynical way I thought it was going to end, with both clones being killed off and everything being reset. But he actually makes it to Earth, and you hear, like, the snippets of news of people finding out what's been happening.
There was a shift, I think, in the 1980s. Previous to the 1980s, bad things happened, and that was just the way it is. And then in the 80s, it was like, no, we have to have a sort of, it doesn't have to be a happy ending, but it has to be not a downer ending. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because this has an ending that's, the revelation is depressing and sad, but the victory of the protagonists we're following is, there's like a
it leads
satisfying
something positive. Yeah. Yeah,
but back in the 70s they were like, happy, no.
Yeah, you know, maybe it was a change of tone and tack, but I like it as an ending because it like has that thing of, it would have been lame if the one clone had gone down, because he'd go there and, you know, he could maybe confront the older version, the original version, or maybe he'd just have a nice 3 years living, doing what he wants, and not being stuck on the moon base. But he would be leaving behind the system, so he'd be letting all the other clones wake up and do all that bullshit that he escaped. So that would suck. So the fact that they managed to
he
knock
goes
out
to the press.
Yeah, he tells people on Earth, and we get just a hint that some people are saying there's a conspiracy, some guys saying this is bullshit, there's some saying it's a massive conspiracy. So there's just little news bits that give you a sense there's all the different reactions on Earth to what had happened. And the fact that they like program one of the mining trucks to knock over the jammer
outside that's stopping the clones communicating with Earth life.
Yeah. So it kind of breaks the loop, which is good. And we still, like, we have, you know, the old clone gets to just die in and knowing that, like, he gets put back in the crash site and used to, you know, he's sort of there for the cleanup team to find and think everything's all right. But he dies kind of at least seeing the other clone gets back, and, like, he's going to die anyway. So there was no saving him. But it's how many, we got a montage showing how many people before this. The Sam we're watching, there's at least, what, 4, 5, 6? How many, Abby, do you think there was of, like, various moustached and bearded and all the other clones that have successfully worked there and then been
They show a few get incinerated,
Yeah, maybe half a dozen at most. But it's only, his daughter's only 15?
Yeah, so that kind of limits it to, like, what, how many threes in 15? Basically 5. And then,
although accidents do happen.
Yeah, he just gets caught on, like, a crater and dies. Or slips on a soap in the shower and breaks his head.
I will... I did want to come back to that scene where he calls home and speaks to his 15-year-old daughter, and, like, it really hits him that he isn't Sam, but he has all of Sam's memories and that desire to go home.
It's heartbreakingly awful to go, like, everything I've ever wanted belongs to someone else, does exist, and I can't
still
have
it. Because it's in my head.
Yeah.
And it was put there by someone else, and I just have to suffer because of that. Like, it's fucking rough. Like, that scene, and again, it's a testament to Sam Rockwell and how good he is that, like, he really makes you feel it, and it's building on that idea from Blade Runner of artificial memories of like, well, what would that do to a living thing that is then confronted with the idea that these memories that are, for all intents and purposes, their real memories, they then find out that they're not, they were just put in there. Like, that's a fucking terrifying concept.
Yeah. It, you know, I mean, it's one of those moral things we don't really have to worry. I mean, hopefully we don't have to worry. I don't think we're all in the Matrix or whatever, being cloned or whatever else is going on to make us farmed in some way. But the revelations make you think about these things. And it's one of those movies you watch, and then for a while after, you're thinking about the ethical and the morality and the, what it, like, it's always fun to think about the concept of clones and how they all are the same, but then they, as soon as they exist, they start developing to be different.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to think about these things, but the film focuses mainly on, you know, the isolation on the moon base and then the two people interacting with each other, isn't it? And the computer.
I was going to say the actual performances of Sam's Rockwell. It's apparently, according to IMDb anyway, in the trivia, the films he watched to prepare were Dead Ringers, David Cronenberg's horrifying film about gynecological surgeon twins, which is a very upsetting and disturbing film.
You also watched the film Twins with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito.
But the other film we watched was Midnight Cowboy. And we did that, I would say, recently, like in the last year.
Yeah.
But it's, that one really does ring, like, that echoes in this film really strongly. The relationship between Rizzo and, what's his name?
Midnight himself.
Cowboy, yeah.
But, oh, he, like, said it so many fucking times at the start.
Oh,
he said it
Joe
was
Buck.
Joe Buck. Where's that Joe Buck?
Yeah.
Well, I think the other thing that if we say Midnight Cowboy is an influence on Sam Rockwell here, you go, well, oh yeah, because John Voight played it like a kind of slightly immature, like youthful kind of dummy. Like, he was a little bit naive, and then the in that case, the older one was the more savvy one. But in this one, it's almost like the younger one is the more savvy one, whereas the old ratty one is a bit...
It takes an interesting turn, because they switch places as the story goes on, and the new clone is the one that kind of starts taking action and pushing back, whereas the old one just kind of goes, ah, fuck it.
I'm not accepting it and stuff as well.
But also the... another good example in Midnight Cowboy 2 with Dustin Hoffman of an actor very upsettingly realistically portraying someone who's very sick.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the aspects of this that I quite enjoy is the visual side, like the conceptually.
I love the effects of the buggies.
Yeah.
Just I don't know if they used models or CGI, but the actual... I thought they were models, because they're bounced to them.
Yeah.
But the actual... The moon...
Tippy tracks? What are you talking about?
Outdoor stuff, yeah.
All the outdoor stuff, one of the things that was good about using the models... that usually is a bad thing in other things, is that they don't have a lot of weight to them. But because it was set on the moon, it was fine that they were a bit bouncy and going around.
Yeah, because they have to be a bit lighter, don't they? Because even though they're massive trucks with, you know, mega wheels and they're mining, it's quiet because there's no fucking sound to be made. And I mean, they do make sound, but, like, there's nothing... Like, you wouldn't be able to hear much because it's on the moon, so there's nothing... There's no... atmosphere to pass the sound through, and also the fact that there's a lighter gravity than Earth. But then again, we got the let's not have him floating around in space, we're not doing that all the way through the movie, so we have artificial gravity in the base for fuck it, we're not, let's not go there.
Yeah,
they just we're not playing around with floating,
don't worry about it.
we figured that gravity bullshit out. But like, that kind of, it's that, like, again, like, old sci-fi, it's got the kind of, everything's, like, it's a little bit NASA-y, so it's, like, basic greys and whites. Everything is kind of, let's not fuss it up and make it too, anything more than practical and neat and tidy. It's a bit like a shitty old Macintosh computer everywhere. Everything's a little bit hexagon, white, simple.
It's a really nice mix of, it's obviously very... heavily influenced by a lot of 70s sci-fi, you know, like I said before, like stuff like Alien or whatever, but it leans enough into modernist realism that it toes the line really well without just being full retro.
Yeah, there's the odd bit, some of the furniture, like he's got bedding areas and couches and stuff that look a bit but also cool as fuck. Like, everything's like cool nooks. It's not a very palatial place. It's, you kind of bog standard. There's plenty of walking around space. And then all the little nooks where you sit and live, they're lived in and worn out. And they have his, like, you know, photographs and memorabilia. And, you know, they're homely. But they're a little bit dated looking, some of the nooks. Not dated, but like vintage-y vibe.
I'm pretty sure. That we'll call him Sam One, the Sam that was there originally. He has never cleaned that cup holder on Gertie, and that is grim.
Like, they have all these like technologies to do whatever, and he can't be asked for washing Gertie off every now and again. But yeah, the fact that Gertie's this computer monitor thing that goes around and has the shitty post-it notes, like kick me, like
you kick me, yeah,
the kick me one and stuff, and it's just he's this. Like butler that you can abuse, but he doesn't care that you've fucked him around because it's just a program in a computer. It's looking after you, and it's a conversation, but it's like it's just, I'm not going to clean him. Like, you know, fuck
it. One of the things about Gertie's directive is that he needs to look after Sam's well-being. So if it makes Sam feel better to put a kick me sign on him, then he has done his job.
Yeah. Plus, the lovely irony of there's no one there to see it other than Sam. Or potentially one of his clones. But I like that all throughout, Gertie is comforting and helpful. And there's two little things that, like, watching it this time, I was like, two little things that slightly niggle me. Because for the most part, it works on a kind of slightly sinister, but also kind of, you like Gertie as a helpful, loving butler computer that is almost Patrick. Like, it's the only, it has communications with, live with Earth, because it has clearance to do so, and has to get whatever the CEOs have decided they're going to do. You know, it implements that. But as you're saying, Abby, his programming is look after Sam. That's, you know, the first thing that it was operative. No, that's not the right word. What? That's the first
directive.
Directive is look after this guy. If he's psychologically fucked up, help him out emotionally somehow. Do run tests, keep him physically healthy. Go to your little hospital thing. You keep him ticking over. That's your job. So, and then what that leads into, my first niggling thing is, so why is Gertie tricked by Sam? So Sam realises, well, he wants to investigate the crash site, the second Sam, right? And so he punctures like a hole in something to make there be a gas leak, and he tries to convince Gertie to let open the door, which is against protocol, let him out to check or he's going to die. So it's like, oh, I might die, so you're allowed to let me out, even though Gertie should probably be able to tell that he's going to go out and check the site, even though he's not supposed to. You know, like, why would this robot thing do let him out?
That Gertie has read that as a warning sign for Sam's mental health. If he's destroying things, then then Gertie has to take steps to help him with his mental health.
But there's a suggestion that it's not a very convincing lie, so he should not let him out because...
No, he's not. It's not that he's believing the lie. It's that, oh no, Sam's acting out. I have to do something to make Sam feel better.
He wants to go out and check the thing. But it's like if Gertie, I guess Gertie doesn't know it's him that sabotaged the outside or has sabotaged the ship. So maybe he does want to check. So if I let him do that, he'll be more placid and comply. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and if Gertie knows that he's breaking the ship, he doesn't want him to break the ship. So it's like, I have to let you outside or you're going to keep breaking, not the ship, sorry, the moon base.
And you might kill yourself or get hurt, which is, I can't allow that. But then, okay, so, but if your job is to look after Sam and he finds out that he's a clone, that will fuck him up entirely. So it should be within your programming to never let him find out there's other versions of him, because that will psychologically scar him and fuck him up. He may even kill himself. So
that's another limitation of the system, probably, is if they never programmed Gertie with a protocol for there being two Sams, then he's broken. He doesn't know what to do because they never gave him the information of what to do.
So the other area, I guess, is... So Sam basically goes out, discovers his corpse, and is confused, but brings him back. We get the story explanation being, we think it's the original Sam has just woken up. But then, anyway, we discover that there's two, and he becomes slowly aware, like, both of him realise there's another one, and they have to come to terms with it. And there's a lot of interesting drama, and scenes play out in interesting ways. But Gertie doesn't explain anything. He just, like, he kind of says, are you all right? You haven't eaten for a long time. He kind of tries to move on to less psychologically scarring topics and just get him fed and feeling okay. Like, he kind of, I'll just nanny you and not answer your questions. And so at some point, Gertie has to let him know, I guess, because this is, it's like past the point of no return. And I think there's that bit where Sam, is it Sam 2, is looking through the computer and trying to get access to some files that he's not supposed to. And Gertie taps in the password for him. And you go, wait a minute, aren't you programmed to never tell him that there are other versions and show him the previous video recordings that other versions of him has made, you know? Why would Gertie tap in that password, do you guys think?
Well,
because
we don't
Gertie's
really...
a good guy in the film. And it's not 2001.
It's sort of... You don't get a really good sense of what Gertie's parameters are based on, whether he's self-learning or if it's
like all is he AI redone.
Yeah, because
how autonomous he is.
Yeah,
he seems to have free reign to do whatever, but he works for the company, isn't it?
Yeah, so he may have like logically come to the decision that it's bad for Sam to be cloned and killed.
Oh, but then he doesn't stop it. He's not. Gertie doesn't have a conscience about it at any other time than him letting know that the dying Sam can know the truth. Like, he keeps this up. He has no scruples about, you know, he's a computer program or an AI that's making each clone have the same set. He makes every one of them think they should just work there for 3 years. He lets them, he keeps up the facade, like, oh, just 2 more weeks, 1 more week, you know. He does that to every one of them. So he obviously doesn't give a fuck about the Sams. It's just doing what he's supposed to, isn't he?
I mean, until now, like, that's the idea. Like, this is an extreme situation.
But I think he even says, like, is there some line about, like, oh, we'll go back, don't worry, me and the rest of the Sams will go back to our usual protocol. Like, get these two nut jobs who found out about each other sorted. Let one die, let one escape, and then I'll get back to, you know, waking up the Sams and keeping them here for 3 years, you know? Like,
but that's the interesting thing about AI and programming is the logical leaps that they make when they think, I need to achieve this goal, so I should do this weird thing. So if you say that Gertie's motivation is that he wants to get back to the status quo, then he does need to help both these Sams to resolve their situation, and then he can begin again.
Like a kind of fucking screwy Mary Poppins.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the explanation the film gives of, well, anything I do to help you, Sam, is for your own, like, I have to help you be well. If that means you psychologically getting over this and dealing with it, then I can let you know more. But, you know, does that go against his ability? Like, he's not allowed to let the Sams in on the situation, because that's also part of what he's supposed to do there.
But then, if they're already in on the situation,
yeah,
he can intervene, because yeah, once the cat's out of the bag, it's out of the bag.
Yeah, I think it is a little bit like what Jamie said, which is as simple as, well, he's a good Hal from 2000. He's nice, and that, like, that's very filmically, like, yeah, we like Gertie, so he helps him. Not like it's almost filmically, it's as simple as that, isn't it? Is he isn't evil? He's good. He's helping him, isn't it?
I'm glad to have been able to help you realize you're overthinking something.
The film is about questioning things and thinking about this stuff. It'd be a really dull film if you just took it on face value and went, that happened, that happened, that happened, yay. Like, it's, you know, it's nice to think about, oh, so does that make sense? Like, the film wants you to put it together yourself, and then it wants you to think back. You kind of, it's one of those films that bears repeating, because then everything, oh, it's all there, isn't it? He burns his hand on the water because he's distracted by, like, echoes of his past self. And then that's a clue as to telling us which Sam is which, because the new one doesn't have a burnt hand. And so everything's there. All these little pieces fit together nicely. So it's a film that wants you to think about it. I don't think I'm overthinking about it. I think I'm thinking about it the right amount. I know, I wanted to bring it. Those were the, genuinely, I was like, those are the two things about Gertie. I was like, does that make sense? Does this, I don't know, I think it can make sense. If you like the film, you go, yeah, sure, let's let it slide. And if you don't like the film, you're like, damn it, doesn't make any fucking, you know, if you get all het up because everything has to make sense, like I occasionally imply I do.
I'm surprised in looking at, I mean, I haven't dug into, you know, like, user reviews or whatever, because, like, fuck, I'm just not, I don't have the emotional capacity to deal with the kind of negative reviews you find on IMDb, but I haven't come across any that, like, nitpick plot holes and all that kind of shit that people usually do online, where they, like, you know, everyone's a fucking professional critic in their own mind.
Well, you're getting a bit too meta here, Jamie. You, like, we realise we're basically reviewing this film.
No, I know, but, like, it's nice how positive a lot of the stuff about this film still is online. Like, there's a couple of reviews where, like, it's boring, but, like, that's not...
If you think this film's boring, so you like.
You think
you're not
like it's one of those things that like you just like explosions and lasers and you can fuck off like.
Jamie's gloves off this week. My gosh.
I think you know what this is it's you know you're meant to enjoy the atmosphere, isn't it? Like the music's kind of interesting. Yeah. Like there's a kind of doobie doobie. There's like a little doobie doobie like bit of score that's. Like it's almost like it sounds. I don't know. How would you guys describe the score? I mean, I didn't do a very good impression of it.
Really outing us for having no knowledge of music.
Well, how do you articulate sounds without actually just doing them? Like it's just the kind of noise that it's a curious and slightly. It's not like a dread filled score.
No, like a lot of
it's just
the
quietly.
Film,
you know,
it's very low key.
Yeah, it's the sense of awe and wonder, but not overstated. It's not like a big swelling. My God! It's just a little, like quiet little musing kind of music to it.
It's kind of the because this is this came out in 2009. It's sort of similar to the Tom Cruise film that also involves clones, Oblivion, that came out.
Yeah.
A few years later, I don't remember exactly when, but it was at the time. It was at the point of which was also good.
Yeah,
but not,
it wasn't quite as satisfying, but it was enjoyable mostly. I would say.
Yeah, I mean, it was visually nice, but the music is the thing that this was at the beginning, I think, ish of the rise of the kind of retro synth music that has now become an entire genre in and of itself. You had films like this, you had films like Drive as well, that had a very kind of 80s throwback synth score, and now you have like a whole, you know, it's a whole genre of music that a lot of different movies and even like I mentioned Death Stranding earlier, that video games use that kind of John Carpenter synth type thing. John Carpenter releasing albums, you know, in the last few years of that kind of music, like, but it's of that ilk right as it was taken off.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think that's why people are quite positive towards it. It's a cult success. I don't know, it didn't blow people's minds, but it was a fairly cheap-made indie film, and then it did really, like, critics liked it, and I think generally audiences who come across it enjoy it. There's not that many people who slag it off, because what can you slag off, really?
It's... What's really, really interesting is looking at it visually and the fact that it is low budget for when it came out and for the budget that it had, it has held up visually better than a lot of big budget movies fucking loaded with CGI.
A lot of talented like effects people have worked on it. Like the team who made it put a lot of effort in, or just knew what they were doing when it came to making it. So you've accomplished something very elegant and nicely produced, just because you've got people who are putting the effort in. And sometimes it is just just get this shit done, fill it up with. We'll just fix it all with CGI. Is often the plan.
It's one of the. One of the problems that I have with the like recent Star Wars films, like the big main ones, is that this film made me realize I really miss just models, really well done physical models of ships and little sets and things.
Because
like it's
just simple things as well, like simple locations, simple concepts, even though it's a complicated. You know, a revelation. It's a really one actor playing himself twice in a room with one actor doing a voice of a computer in a cool location and with model work precisely.
I think a better way of putting it would be streamlined.
It's not just full of garbage and shit, is it? It's not just visual noise.
One of the reasons why the original, the actual original, like Star Wars films, especially the first two, hold up so well. Or are still entertaining is it has that physical tactile sensation to everything that's happening. because of the model work, because of the effort that went into it, because of the sets. And one of the things that you've, like, even, I'm not, like, the new ones aren't necessarily bad. The Last Jedi's fucking great, and
well, let's,
I will stand by
before
that
we go into,
but, yeah,
like,
I'm not going off
a big
on a tangent,
Star Wars
but, like,
thing here.
It's still, like, the space battles and whatever are just like, eh. Like, it's hard to give a shit because nothing feels like it's happening.
They're also done by a large quantity of people and producers, and it's a committee.
Yeah.
This is just one director, and, you know, if this is a writer-director doing writing an idea, writing something for Sam Rockwell to do, one actor, a bunch of people making the sets and the effects, and, you know, it's small and serving the purpose of the script.
It's
and it's
more
just deliberate,
like,
and good.
It's more satisfying to, you know, watch one of these model buggies bounce slightly across the moon surface in this film than, like, the space battle at the start of, I think it was, like, Revenge of the Sith that everyone said was, whoa, it's amazing. It's not. It's just a cutscene from a video game put in a film. But, like, and it gives, like, it's a testament to how different physical effects make a film feel.
I think it's partly to do with the type of film that it is as well, but it felt very intimate as a film because it's just you and them together.
Yeah, you feel like you're in there with them.
Yeah, it's obviously it couldn't be a play without having, like, twins playing the character, but it feels like a little, you know, one man play with two, somehow able to be there twice or three times. But, like, the simplicity to it is what makes it so enjoyable, is it's not this, you know, over, it's all about the tension between the two, old Sam, young Sam. One of them is just fucking around with his, like, endlessly chipping away at his little model of his hometown that it, and he doesn't remember that when he started it. He's just always been adding to it because every Sam has been adding to it. I feel sorry for the one who did the first bit. He must have been a bit like, oh, I didn't finish, bollocks. And then they never finish, I guess. So
I do want to call him out on one thing.
Oh yeah,
you know when they've got the third Sam on the table,
yeah,
when they're working out how they're going to go, that was a completely different person. That wasn't Sam Rockwell. I was very unhappy about it.
What was their initial plan? They were going to put the corpse of... They were going to thaw out a new clone and stick him in.
Yeah.
That's really... They both realise they're clones, and then they're like, right, we can chuck a clone for the cleanup team in. We can spare one clone that doesn't know who he is.
Sam 1 does say, it's like, I knew you weren't going to do that, because I would never have done that. We're not that guy.
Yeah.
We all knew we were going to just pop me in the bin. Myself. Yeah, because
I like how messy their plan is. Like, it's such a freaking, like, twisting themselves in knots so that they can figure out a way to get the fuck off the moon.
Yeah, but all it comes down to in the end is the literally more mature one deciding to go, do you know what, the jig's up. I've had, like, because he's the one who speaks to his future, his daughter now that she's older.
Yeah.
And so he's had that communication, and I think that's when the penny drops and he's a bit more,
there's no point in going back. Like, it would just be even worse and more traumatic.
Yeah, so him accepting his death at that point and thinking, so now the goal is to save younger clone Sam. And the younger clone Sam has, you know, he's put in motion that he's going to knock out that Ariel. But he basically gets to go back to Earth and, I guess, live out 3 years and then be really ill, his teeth will fall out. Maybe he'll find some science on Earth that will keep him alive, I don't know.
I like that the Sam that does make it back to Earth seemingly realises that, like, what's important for him to do isn't to satisfy his own curiosity and visit what he, you know, was led to believe was his family, and instead going out, what's happening.
I'm going to buy a motorbike, and I'm going to tell people cool shit and drive around.
Yeah, like, it's a satisfying way of, because it would, like, if he ultimately went back and met the family, that would just be a horrible, traumatic thing for that 15-year-old.
Yeah, so bail on that. But then that family's going to know, aren't they? Like, they're going to be hounded by the press and stuff.
Yeah, but that's a whole different issue. And,
Moon
you know,
2,
that's...
Earth.
but, like... No, yeah, and it wraps up in a satisfying way in a different way, and it does. It's nice that it ends with that, like, skewed but still hopeful ending, rather than being really cynical about it and just killing off both the clones and resetting the whole thing. I did want to say before we forget that one of the corporate guys on the phone is Matt Berry.
Oh, cool.
And the other one is Benny Wong. I want to say.
Is it? He was in The Martian as well, wasn't he? As one of the NASA guys. Sorry, not that connected, but I did think of him. I don't know. Was it Benny Wong?
Maybe.
Oh, I don't know.
I'm trying to remember now because I didn't write that down in my notes.
It's easy to recognise Matt Berry as soon as he talks. Hello.
Yes.
Matt Berry.
The toast of London. Do you have any other notes, Abby, that you perhaps might have skimmed over here, or any other things you wanted to mention?
Let me have a quick look here. We may or may not have seen Sam Rockwell's butt.
Well,
that was an uncomfortable moment.
Did he scalpel himself as well? He like sort of he gets in fights and he has a little wash and he's you know, he does. You get if you're after Sam Rockwell, you get your full helper here.
That weird haircut machine.
Yes, it's like the fucking invention by Caractacus Potts in fucking Chitty Bang Bang with his fucking Hoover fucking scissor thing.
By the way, there is a real product from, I think, maybe the early 90s or the 80s that is that. It's a hairdryer with, like, scissors.
Suck and cut.
So, yeah, which is maybe the saddest thing I've ever seen. That, like, you... are so lonely that you have to cut your own hair with a hairdryer appliance. Like, it's weird. There's old ads for it, like on YouTube. I can't remember what it's called though.
The amount of time that Sam Rockwell had to spend on that barely cushioned table.
Mm.
Oh, poor
one, of the,
guy.
One of the other things is, so I think it was mainly for the trailer. That they had, so they have, like, you spend 3 years on a moon base with no one there, you're going to not bother shaving and stuff and all this. And Gertie's there to sort of say, hey, no, I mean, it won't kill you if you grow a beard and have smell like shit, but do you want to pop yourself for hygiene in the shower? But, like, so he grows this beard, and then on the last day to go home to see his family, he's like, oh, I'll shave it off. But I think it's partly to make the trailer more confusing, is to have, right, so he's, at one point he's beardy and hairy, then he's short-haired, and then there's this other ill version, and then then we see clips of other versions that are ill and dying and leaving video messages. So I think they just wanted to go, oh, let's just see how many weird looks we can give Sam Rockwell in one film, you know?
Which he is down for, obviously. Passive-aggressive ping-pong.
there was lots of things where... I've been on this moon base learning stupid skills that I have experiences mainly in looking after plants, making like wicker villages, not wicker, like wooden villages, and I've learned how to do ping pong I didn't know before. So he has little XP's old rank Sam, doesn't he?
And I'm going to just quickly do the maths on the 938 hours that he spent on that model.
Are you actually going to do the math? What?
That is...
We can maybe figure out how many clones there's been.
It's only 39 days.
But then how often... We don't know how often he goes to sit down at the table and make his hometown out of wood.
It's true.
It was Benny Wong in the film, by the way. I checked.
Thank you all.
And also the music is by Clint Mansell, who did the music for Pi, Requiem for a Dream, previous episode Doom, starring The Rock and Carl Urban, the wrestler. Like, he's done tons of like cool, interesting scores.
I'm gonna have to call him out for
shit typing. Oh, the old two finger,
not even two finger, they were using lots of fingers, they were doing fuck all.
Do you remember in GoldenEye on the Nintendo 64, whenever characters would type and they just had their big bald fists and would just like massage the keyboard with their fists, and it would just make that noise. And so, and Natalia would do it with a gun in her hand. So she's just got these two like fucking clubs with a magnum and is just like slowly thumping the keyboard.
That's the one thing the film got wrong, is in the by 2035, presumably, you know, it'll all be touchscreen. You'll just be, you know, swiping the Kevin Spacey smiley face to get what you want. You won't actually have to type anything. Passwords,
Just look at my face. Yeah?
Everything. They need, Duncan Jones needed to realise that everyone would have interactive googly glasses, and yeah, we'll see. We'll see if 20. We'll see what's happening. The way things are going, we're going to be nowhere near the fucking moon mining bullshit. We'll be lucky if we avoid an apocalypse at this rate.
The fact that he prints things out on little pieces of paper.
I think that's part of the retro thing, though.
I know. I do love it. Like, I really like that.
Send in a fax from the moon to the Earth.
I felt a bit wrong that I was watching it going, oh, I'd fucking live on this moon base for 3 years.
I would love to live on that base.
Really explore the limits of how often you can masturbate in space without getting bored. But you would, if you're the, what else is he gonna do? Like, he's probably fucked that cup holder, isn't he?
Smiley faced computer hovering over you the whole time, voiced by
maybe you wouldn't want to. You'd be very, look, Gertie, I need some fucking me time. Turn all the cameras off. I mean all of them, especially the one in the shower. I know that blinking light comes on. I know you're watching me.
Don't be posting any weird Christmas videos, please.
I don't know what we're supposed to do with the fact that Kevin Spacey, all these people who shame themselves, you go, oh, but I still want to enjoy your things. I think my rule of thumb is, if you're not a paedophile, I still am going to enjoy your work and be all... Basically, it's the equivalent of, like, tut, you should know better, or be in jail, or whatever's wrong. Whatever you've done wrong, shame on you. But I'm fucked if I'm going to delete everything I like just because someone did something wrong. Because everyone does something wrong. I'm not forgiving Kevin Spacey.
Do not reflect the views of every member of this podcast.
Look, I may have touched some young blokes up in the 80s as a tiny baby. What do you? Like, I'm just saying, like, I don't know what we're supposed to do about these people who shame themselves.
I mean, it's a personal thing, I think, of whether you can divorce what someone did if they did something really bad from the work they did, like whether you can watch Rosemary's Baby comfortably, or go back and watch like Louis C.K. stand up in the wake. You know, it's a personal question whether you can.
Sorry. I find it more difficult with people who you find out have done terrible things, but it's because they're completely unhinged. Like with Marlon Brando, it's like, oh yeah, he did terrible things, but it's because he was absolutely crazy.
I would have fucked Richard Pryor as well, though.
And then it's kind of like, I know you did bad things, but that's then condemning you for mental illness.
I don't know. I think you got to make, to me, you got to draw the lines of, oh, fuck it. Look, it's their work is not them. And after all, like in this, at least, you're just looking at a computer with various like emojis coming up. It's not like you're staring into the cold eyes of Kevin Spacey as he lies to you. It's just a computer with his voice. And, you know, in other things, it is just like, oh, look, it's their work. John Voight is a complete right-wing nut job, but Midnight Cowboy's fucking ace. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like I said, it's a personal decision, and it's kind of a sliding scale. Some people, I think.
That's and true. Also, like, once someone's dead, it's like,
Well, they're dead, so fuck them.
Yeah,
it's a tough one, especially to talk about on a podcast which has Rich on it.
Yeah.
Don't make me go back to talking about David Bowie's now deceased scrotum. Anyway,
the whole of him is deceased, not just his dick and balls.
He lives on in the in the through his Zowies and Bowies and his
hey,
albums. What's the inadverted Twin Peaks connection?
David Bowie's in it.
Oh, right. That's
important. In the movie.
But this is Duncan Jones. Is Zowie, isn't he? That's his middle name, is it?
Yes.
Or is it Zowie?
It's Zowie. It's supposed to be pronounced the same way as Bowie, which a lot of people don't pronounce correctly, including me, for
it's
a very
long... Which would make it Zooey Booey.
Zooey Booey. Yeah. But, what I think is great about Moon is the simplicity, the atmosphere, the whole shebang. Like, Sam Rockwell's really good. Kevin Spacey does what he does well, and the computer aspect is well conceived. And the whole concept works. It's visually quite good. It's an enjoyable little space to spend 90-odd minutes and to wrap your brain around some cool sci-fi junk.
It does a lot in a short run time. It feels longer, but not in a bad way. Not in the way that, like, some hour and a half films, like, I don't know, Red Sonja, which felt like it went on for fucking ever.
Yeah.
But nothing happened. Whereas this, it's short, but fucking tons of stuff happens, and it covers so much. And it's very engaging in multiple different ways. And it's a really good idea of high concept sci-fi done in a way that doesn't feel like it doesn't feel pretentious. It doesn't feel like it's trying to be high concept and being like, ooh, and don't be clever. Like, no, it's a simple story of like a guy coming to terms with like himself kind of and his own existence. And it's nicely shot. The model work is fantastic. And Sam, it's another film where Sam Rockwell is just fucking brilliant in it. Like, I wish he was in more like leading roles.
Yeah.
It's kind of a metaphor from what you said earlier. It is kind of like watching a really good play, or like a bottle episode of a TV show where they just have two characters trapped in a place.
It's a good episode of Red Dwarf or something.
Well, for some reason, the one I'm thinking of is there is an episode of MASH that I think is in the early seasons where Hawkeye has a concussion from something.
He goes to the moon.
And yes, no, he's in a Korean family's house. Like, they take him in, and they can't speak English and he can't speak Korean, but he has to stay awake because he has a concussion and he can't fall asleep.
Right.
The whole episode is him, like, just trying to stay awake with this Korean family who don't know what the fuck he's talking about.
Yeah.
And it's just him by himself trying to, like, stay conscious. And I love episodes of TV shows like that, that are, you know, one or two of the usual characters in a single place for half an hour or an hour. And that's kind of what this is. Like, it is, like, a really good... It's a good bottle episode, or it's a good segment of a sci-fi anthology.
Mm. Yeah, and it is a conversation with himself. Sam Rockwell very much talking to himself with himself.
Also, just to correct something I said earlier, I'm not saying I don't like explosions and lasers in space, because I very much do. I'm just saying that this is as exciting as something like that, just in a different way.
Yeah, it's a different kind of tense and engaging. Yeah. I'll go next, and then we can end with you, Abby, seeing as you flew us to the moon.
Okay.
I was trying to think before Jamie was explaining his, and the only thing I could think of is, I mean, I really like Moon. I think it's just one of my favourite sci-fis of this kind, because it fits in with stuff like Silent Running, and it fits in with Alien, and some of the early 70s stuff, even like Dark Star. And, you know, it's got a cool atmosphere and a nice vibe, and it's just a nice, you know, beginning, middle, end. It's like a nice concept that you play with and then you put it down. It's just a nice standalone thing. It doesn't have to have endless sequels showing us what happens to this guy now.
Yes,
so
it's not the start of a fucking franchise, like everything has to be now.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know, metaphor-wise, it's a bit like when you learn more about the moon. Like, you start off going, yeah, yeah, it's this stupid disc in the sky. Who cares? It possibly controls the sea. And it's made of cheese, and you know. But when you when you start to learn about moon landings and actual, like, you know, listen to the odd podcast about, like, NASA. Oh, I don't know if you guys do, but I occasionally like a science podcast or something where it's like, oh, learning about what happened in the moon landings. And I think the moon landings were so interesting because they only happened for a short period of time, 60s and 70s. A few people stood on the moon. They, you know, took samples, they knocked golf balls around, and they, you know, they did the research and did the experiencing, and then that's it. They just went to the moon a few times, and that was enough, and we've got the science that we needed from it, and we've got no other reason to go there. So in many ways, it's like learning about the kind of time where we spent actually stepping on the moon. And it's like, I mean, there's like, what's that thing, First Man, is that what it's called, with Ryan Gosling playing Neil Armstrong? And watching that, it's like, oh, it's fascinating thinking about all the, like, dated things that people had to experience, all the experiences, all the science went into these things, but how simple and raw it all was, how it wasn't overly complicated.
Yeah, when you realize, it's that realization of how fucking mental it was.
You're in a vibrating tin with a few buttons going to the moon. And
what we'd you guys to do is sit on this, basically a really big bomb, and we're going to blow it up, and then you're going to ride the explosion into the sky until you're in space.
Yeah.
And what then, I'd love, fingers crossed, you're going to land on the moon and be able to come back.
What I love is that the whole thing basically started because of a pissing contest as well.
Yeah. based on, well, we have to beat them. Can we do it? I don't know, maybe. All right.
Well, we're fucking going to. Those commie bastards would be damned if they're getting a flag on the moon before us.
Or the, like, Michael Collins being in orbit around the moon by himself and being, like, on the dark side of the moon, not able to communicate with Earth while the other two guys are... That's fucking insane.
The world's loneliest man.
Yeah.
Definitely had a wank.
Jesus Christ.
Fucking hell.
Really? I mean, I can't get it. And I also I'm suddenly starting to realise your internal debate about whether or not you can enjoy Kevin Spacey's work. So I think I'm...
Oh dear.
Just,
well, let me
find
me...
places.
Let me go scratch that. Let's get back. I was just trying to get to a conclusion of a metaphor. I didn't want to have a long debate about all this. I just think, like the moon, it appears simple at first, and then the more you find out about the science and the exploration of it, and, you know, the more you get drawn in and you get pulled into the complexity and you start to really engage and enjoy. And this is the film is just like that, where you're like, okay, what's all this? So he's milling about, he's doing this and that, discoveries, bouncing around on the moon, chatting with the computer, and then you're like, oh my god, this is, you know, it gets more and more compelling the more you know. I feel like the film is like, you know, learning about the real science and the real moon and all the stuff that happened in the past. So I guess it's like that. It's the moon landings were good. The film Moon is good. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. I'm really glad that you both like this film. I would have been very sad if I'd have brought this and you'd be like, oh, I don't like it. But it's just one of those ones. I'll do my final thought and a metaphor together, because most of it is the same reasoning that you just had, Rich. And it's the video game Asteroids.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's so streamlined. Well, I say streamlined. It was cutting edge at the time. But there's so little to it. But it is oddly compelling. I played it again relatively recently. And it is just, it's kind of stressful. It's like, keep exploding the asteroids. Don't let them hit you. Keep doing it. And it's got that same 80s nostalgia to it. It's classic science fiction in a game form. And it's just, it's that one concept done to the maximum of their abilities at the time.
Yeah, it's admirably simple, but like it really effective, isn't it? That's essentially what you're saying. You got what you wanted, Abby. A fuck ton of Sam Rockwell, and he done his kicked. He filled your space boots up with him, and it was for the better because he's really enjoyable. Like Jamie said, let's get more of him, guys. Let's someone phone up Hollywood, get Sam Rockwell some more bloody work, eh? Anyway,
you can play. Customs a superhero in one of the million superheroes in the Marvel universe.
Oh, everyone's been a fucking superhero.
No, but wasn't he? He was one of the villains that
he was in Iron Man 2.
That hasn't come back and probably
was he?
Could.
He was.
He was a rival of Tony Stark rather than Iron Man.
Was it Hammer or something?
Yes.
Huh. Fuck, I don't remember. All I remember of Iron Man 2 is Mickey Rourke having two big whips.
And also him going, bird. It's bird. No, Sam Rockwell is there dancing and doing presentations after he'd nicked all of Tony Stark's science. Doing cheap versions of it all. Anyway, maybe next week Iron Man 2. No, it's definitely spoiler filled. It's very patchy. Iron Man 2. We've been to the moon. And now we're coming back.
It's always... Yes, we've been to the moon with a good film. And I'm sure next time we'll be back down to Earth with the usual shit that we do.
Yeah, whose pick is it next?
Somebody's, no doubt. We all have to sit in quarantine. We have to sit in quarantine for ages. They all had... Like, the dudes who went to the moon had to come back and just sit reading magazines in the quarantine for a few weeks. How fucking bullshit is that? You survive all that shit, and no one wants to get space germs on them, so, yeah, enjoy reading Life magazine 17 times. Oh, Michael Collins, have you done all of the crosswords? You know Buzz wanted to do one. Fuck's sake.
See, why hasn't anyone made that film?
The like, 2 weeks where... Like, the three dudes who went to the moon had to fucking just sit there picking their noses and being like, oh, I'm kind of sick of you guys now. I've been to the moon and back. I want to see my wife.
They must have hated each other for at least a few weeks.
And then they had to travel the world together, just glad-handing everyone and meet and saying, yeah, I'm just telling the same anecdotes again and again. No, we didn't see any Martians. Oh, God.
No wonder Buzz Aldrin's punching people in the face.
Yeah, he'd be so tired, wouldn't he? It's exhausting. Anyway, goodbye and stuff.
Speaking of exhausting, goodbye.
Bye! It's been
one small podcast for us, one giant trial for anyone listening. Yeah. Bye. Dancing on the moon.